it's time for Real Fashion on Pop Off with Harry Jane Pop.
And we are going to be popping off about wonderful things in your life, some absolutely incredible people today, not only giving you tools for life, but also giving us some history that is absolutely incredible. Hi, Mary Jane Pop here. Welcome to Pop Off on this Thursday. It's a glorious day on the West Coast. Hope the rest of you in the rest of the country are having better weather. I know you're experiencing what we did out here, and that's sweltering and sizzling, but hang in there. It soon will pass, and we'll all kind of be back and comfortable once again. But on the show today, yes, some tools a little later on in the show because, you know, people are wanting to look for jobs and find good jobs, and you know what? They're scarce. A lot is going outsourcing. A lot of jobs are being just done away with. It's an economic thing. Well, have you thought about entrepreneurship, especially if you're a female? Well, I'm telling you, entrepreneurship is a possibility. And we're going to talk with a lady who is like at the top of the hilt of entrepreneurs out of New York. She has her own company, and she's going to give us some tools on how you can make it. And to heck with the glass ceiling, it doesn't exist as far as we're concerned. Also, I love the lady that we're going to have second. She is Dr. Beth Erickson. She wrote a book called, well, it's going to be coming out. It's not done yet. It's called Aging Isn't for Sissies. And you know what? She's right. I had my birthday on Tuesday. I turned the big 6-0, and it isn't for sissies, but you know what? There are tools. There are things you can do. There are attitudes that you can have. And if you have the right attitude, I'm telling you right now, folks, you can survive, and you can survive well. And you can also go from one career and one idea to another idea if you open up your mind to it. And my first guest has opened up her mind to all the possibilities. This lady is the epitome of what entrepreneurship is all about changing your ideas and your ideals and who you are and what you are. And I'll tell you, wait till you hear the stories that she has to tell right here on Pop Off. Oh, I tell you, this gal has appeared on a variety of television shows back in the 50s. And I'm talking about Bob Hope, Donald O'Connor, Eddie Cantor Show. She did movies like Son of Sinbad and The French Line with Jane Russell. She was a Vegas showgirl. She entertained troops in Korea. She was in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea with Kirk Douglas. She created Voluptia and became television's love goddess. Playboy featured her. She appeared in movies with the likes of Spencer Tracy and in Jailhouse Rock with Elvis. She then became a real estate entrepreneur, founded the Lavender Real Estate Firm, and I can go on and on and on. I can take up the whole interview time with her credits alone. Suffice to say that Gloria Paul is perfectly Hollywood history come alive. Oh, and I might mention, she's written some 13 books, too. Hi, Gloria. How are you?
I'm just great. I love your introduction.
Well,
I can hardly wait to hear what I have to say now.
Well, it's so fun to talk about all these things. I don't even know where to begin. But, you know, I'm going to begin with some of the men that you have dated in your life, and you have dated some of the top ones. Do any of them stand out as exciting men in your life?
Oh, Howard Hughes was interesting. Yeah, he and I had a great interview. Not an interview, but a date.
In what way?
Well, because I was a showgirl at the Sahara Hotel at the time, and he was in the audience sitting ringside with Deborah Padgett and her mother, Mrs. Gibson. And I no sooner got backstage than I got him one of his, what do you want to call it, henchmen or adversaries or whatever, came backstage and said that he has a note for me, not for the other showgirls, but just for me. And he would like me to read the note and give him an immediate answer. And the note said, "Would you please meet me at the Desert Inn Cocktail Lounge after the show?" And I looked at it, and it was signed Howard Hughes.
Wow.
And I looked at it, and I said, "Wow." I said, "No problem. I'll be there."
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, I was. And I sat with Jimmy Vernon was the name of the henchman or his stooge or whatever you want to call it. And I sat with Jimmy, and right punctually, right on time, Howard Hughes showed up. And Jimmy got up, and Howard Hughes sat down, And he had a big smile on his face.
I bet.
And he said, I'm so happy that you're able to be here, Miss Paul. So I said, you can call me Gloria. What the heck, right?
Now,
and
this
I
was
said, can I call you Howard? He says, okay. He was amused by it. And usually he was a very serious type person. You know, he was saying, what's going on in your life, and what are you doing in Vegas, and what's your background, and all that. And I said, well, I don't know why I'm in Vegas. Things are really slow. I was trying to get into the movie industry. I did very well in television, but not as well in movies. And I said, I actually did a movie for you called French Line, and another one called, Son of Sinbad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dale Robertson. And I really want to be more than just, you know, just a walk-on or a bit player or an extra or background or whatever. I said, I have a burning desire to be a star. And I said, as a matter of fact, why don't you make me a star?
Oh.
He smiled. He says, what'd you say? I said, why don't you make me a star? Put me under contract and school me and groom me. And give me dancing lessons and singing lessons and drama lessons, even though I'm a natural-born actress.
Uh-huh.
And he said, that's very interesting. He says, I said, I don't want to be kicking up in the chorus. I want to be a headliner. So he says, you know what? I have my studio for sale right now. But otherwise, I would put you on the contract. I says, you must think I'm pretty hot stuff. None of the other showgirls got a note from you to meet you. I was very brazen.
So was that the only time you met him?
22 at the time. What?
Was that the only time you met him?
Oh, no. No, several other times. But then when the conversation was drawn to a close, I said, Howard, how would you like to speak about nomenclature? He says, what? And he wiggled his ear and he says, what'd you say? I says, nomenclature, aviation nomenclature. And he says, what do you know about that? I says, well, I was an aircraft mechanic in 1943. That was 10 years before. You know, when I was talking to him, and I said, and I was able to service engines on all the bombers and the fighter planes and the reconnaissance planes and pursuit planes and all that. And he said, wow. He says, I'm very impressed. I says, yeah. As a matter of fact, I was an A student in my class, and I said, why didn't you, if any time you have any problems with your airplanes or your engines, that's what I specialize in, engines. I said, just give me a call, and I'll come over and help you out.
That's so cool.
And he thought that was so funny.
I bet he was shocked that you knew that kind of information.
Yeah, he says, you know, here's this tall, glamorous showgirl sitting there telling him about aircraft engines. And he was really impressed with it. That really knocked his socks off. He couldn't believe that I had a brain, right? I wasn't entitled to have a brain and look like I did up on the stage, right?
Is it true also that you dated Joe DiMaggio one time?
Yeah, Joe and I, yeah. I appeared in a tabloid called the New York Inquirer in April 56, and there was a half-page picture of me, and the other half had a tiny little headshot of Grace Kelly and Prince Rainier. And the title of the front page said, It's Tough to Be Beautiful by Voluptua. And Voluptua was a name that I used for a television show that I had back in 54.
Yeah, the love goddess.
And I was TV's love goddess, yes. And I got fired for being too torrid for TV, too suggestive, too double entendre. And it was a time slot of 9:30 to 11 when all the kids were still up. And so I got all kinds of rebellions and hate letters from the groups like the PTA.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Catholic Tidings had a sermon on me. They called me corruptua.
Oh, my God.
And I made the headlines when they fired me.
Oh, my.
In every newspaper in California, and calls from all over the United States wanting to interview me. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty depressed about it because I didn't deserve to be fired. You know, they just cut me off. Huh. Channel 7 just... ABC just cut me off. They didn't want to have anything to do with me anymore because they were threatened with closing the station if they didn't get this siren off the air.
Wow.
So what could they do? They just fired me cold turkey. And I really had so many ideas of all the things I was going to do that was worthwhile, you know, advice to the lovelorn and all that, and how to get your man and
That would have been great. Well, you were just ahead of your time.
Totally ahead of my time on TV. Now, Mae West went through the same thing with movies, with the censors, with the Hays office.
Now, you're writing a book about Mae West, aren't you?
I'm writing a book about her, yeah. There's about 50 similarities of me and Mae. And she was in my childhood. She used to come visit a lot. And my mother used to read tea leaves, and she always read her tea leaves. And it was quite an experience having her there all the time.
Now, you said you have...
And I guess that maybe that gave me a mindset that I, too, want to be beautiful. I want to grow up and be beautiful or pretty. And I want to be on the stage. And I was, like I say, a natural-born actress.
Now,
and
you
and I
have something in common here, because you told me that Mae West's name was really Mary Jane.
Mary Jane West was her first name, yes.
Wow.
And that really is an amazing coincidence, because I never met you before, and I didn't know anything about you. And then here, we're talking about Mae West, and I said, wow, what a coincidence.
Yeah.
And there's so many coincidences constantly, you know, between me and everybody else, but never as many as with Mae West. She might be my mother.
Really?
Just possibly. I'm working on that book right now.
Amazing. Now, I didn't get a chance.
And there's a lot of things that really endorse that. I'm not just dreaming it.
Yeah.
It's just that everywhere I go, people say, you remind me of Mae West. You look like Mae West. You know,
you even have that tone, you know, the tone that she had.
I do have the same tone?
Yeah, the same voice tone. Absolutely.
Well, we're both from Brooklyn, you know.
Yeah. Now, by the way, I didn't get a chance. You actually did date Joe DiMaggio then, too, right?
Oh, yeah. So what happened was, when he saw this sensational photograph of me on the cover of the front page of the tabloid New York Inquirer, he really broke his neck to reach me, to meet me. He just unearthed all of New York City at the time. And he finally found me, okay? And he arranged to have a blind date with me, with this gal that I knew that was a friend of a gal that was sharing a hotel room with me at the time. I was coming back from Germany, from a USO show at the time. I was in New York at that time. So we went out, and I acted so silly, such a dumb blonde. That's the kind of parts they used to give me, so I knew how to act dumber than anyone.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody could act any dumber than me. And I said to him, they said, well, this is Joe, and I said, Joe who? And that almost knocked him out, you know.
Wow.
Because he loved identity, right? Because
yeah.
Look who he was. He was so famous. But I was very cool, and I was kind of comical, and I kind of tongue-in-cheek. And I said, so what do you do, Joe? And he says, DiMaggio. I said, DiMaggio, DiMaggio. And I repeated it, and he thought that maybe it was ringing a bell. Instead of, I said, are you Italian? And that broke up his friends, you know. He said, how could you be so dumb? And then Joe looked at me, and he says, so what planet are you from? That I wouldn't know him, you know?
Yeah.
And then we went to this restaurant called Al Schacht's, and he was a former baseball player. And the whole room was decorated with baseball stars. And people kept coming over to our table and talking to Joe and asking for his autograph. And I said, why are these people asking for your autograph?
Oh,
Are you famous? I said to him, are you famous? And he says, slightly.
Gloria, you're a bad girl.
Huh?
You were a bad girl.
Oh, I told him later, you know. But I just had a desire to put him on, because I knew all women were flocking over him everywhere. Everywhere in the world, flocking. Everybody wanted to meet Joe DiMaggio, and here I got a date with him. And then when the date ended, he says, why don't you stay here for a while? And I said, I can't. I got to get back to the coast. I said, I've got a car sitting there in my driveway. I've got an apartment to pay for. I've got commitments to make. I've got an agent that's looking for me. I got to get back. So he says, well, it's just too bad. He says, because we could really have a lot of fun together. I says, yeah, you know, Joe, I know who you are. I was just putting you on. I just was doing a dumb blonde scene for you. So he says, okay, I respect that. Then I ran into him a couple years later. He was sitting at Frascati's bar at the restaurant, and he was sitting by himself. And I walked over and said, hey, Joe, how you doing? I says, I really do know who you are, you know. Remember that? Well, he says, yes, and he smiled.
How could he forget something like that?
And then I said,
you know, I've got to ask you, Gloria.
That's what happened. I said to him, that's a good way for you to have remembered me because I was different.
I love it. Gloria, I've got to ask you. Now, you were raised and you had your fame when it was the heyday of Hollywood.
Oh, I love the 50s.
If you could compare it to today, what do you think of Hollywood today?
Oh, I don't even want to work. I don't care for the language. I don't care for the content of these movies. Everything is so down, you know? It's too crude. You know, I mean, here I'm a love goddess, right? And I'm calling the kettle black, because look what I did. I was suggestive, big deal. But look what they do on TV today. And look at the movies. Unless there's sex, violence, and drugs, nobody even goes to the movies.
Yeah. Well, so, there's no suggestion anymore. It's very blatant.
That's right. Nothing's held back. Everything up front.
What was the favorite movie that you did?
Oh, I loved working with Elvis. That was fun. Yeah, I played the part of a burlesque queen. They have me in the cast list as striptease woman. That's
amazing.
As far as they can figure out how to say burlesque queen, striptease woman.
What was he like?
Elvis was cute. I met him a year before I worked with him, before he was a movie star. And he was appearing at the New Frontier in Vegas. And I had a girlfriend, and I knew Shecky Green. And I went backstage before the show to say hi to them. Because usually, you know, they split right after the show. And I figured at least I can say hi to them. And this was April 56 also when I came back from New York after dating Joe.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was he was standing backstage. And I don't usually do this. I don't usually go backstage before a show because, you know, people are hyped up, ready to perform. And he was standing there. And he was just an average-looking kid. You know, I didn't know who he was. Never heard of him before. And Muriel, the showgirl friend that I was talking to that went backstage, she says, "Do you know Elvis?" And I said, "Who?" And I was serious. I said, "Who? Elvis who? What kind of a name is Elvis?" So she says, "Well, he's one of our performers." And then he said, came over and he said, "How do you do, ma'am?" And I said, "Oh, I know who you are. I just saw a great big 100-foot blow-up of you outside. That's you, right?" He says, "Yeah." And I says, "You're holding a guitar, so I guess you're a guitarist, right?"
"Oh, my."
He says, "That's right, ma'am." And then I said to him, "Well, I'm sitting ringside with Rory Calhoun and his wife and Danny from Danny's Hideaway, and we're looking forward to seeing you perform because we don't know who you are, you know." And he says, "Well," he says, "you sure will know who I am when I get through, ma'am." I said to him, "Hopefully, yes, of course." Anyhow, so I reached out my hand. I don't know if I can say this. Is it limited what I can say on TV, on the radio?
Think of it as a family show, if you can.
Well, I mean, it's not dirty. It's suggestive again. There I go.
Okay, that's all right.
Okay, so I reached out my hand. I thought he was going to shake hands with him. And then he brought it up to his mouth, and I thought he was going to kiss my hand, continental style, you know. And he started sucking on my fingers. And
you're
I
said, kidding.
What's with you? I says, "Do you do windows too? I mean, what is this? My hand's all wet." I saw wiping it off on my dress. He says, "The other girls don't do that." And I said, "Get you." And I called him a corny, horny hick. And he howled. He thought that was so funny. I says, "Why are you coming on to me?" He says, "Because that's Tennessee style. That's how we shake hands." I said,
"You're
remind
kidding.
Me not to go there."
Oh, my gosh. Now, you know what? I gotta get to the part where you changed your whole life. I mean, you became a real estate entrepreneur, and for those who don't know, you actually handled the O.J. Simpson house, right?
Yeah, I bought it. Yeah, I bought it back in 78, and we redid it and put it back on the market, and in a year and a half, we made a $200,000 profit. And,
now, tell me how you got into real estate.
Oh, well, I wasn't getting many jobs. I was getting to be 30 years old. The public wasn't clamoring for me. All I had was bit parts. And I figured it's time that I do something solid, you know, like get some kind of job going for me. And I read an article where three-quarters of the nation's wealth was owned by women. And I figured, well, that's for me. So I went to real estate school in 1959. I got myself a license. And 2 years later, and since I was on a television show for 7 years doing fur commercials for a man named Eddie Gewirtz,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it was the Tom Duggan show. And Tom used to plug me. He used to say, oh, Gloria's in real estate now. Go buy something from her. She always has great houses and all that.
Great.
And that helped me when I opened my office in 61. I painted the little building, little white building, lavender. And I had lavender signs, and everything was round. And everything, my Mercedes and my little T-Bird, 57 T-Bird, was lavender. I had everything painted. And I built a lavender house up in the hills in Nichols Canyon across the street from Ricky Nelson.
Well, you kept everything. Is that your favorite color, I take it, right?
Oh, why would you think that?
If you have to live with it 24/7, it better be your favorite color.
I built a lavender house up there, too.
Amazing.
And I was really, and my wardrobe was lavender, and all the salesmen that I hired, I bought lavender shirts for way before Century 21 thought of identifying the color with
the
yellow jackets, you know.
That's the entrepreneurial spirit. That's, you know, you came up with a new concept, something different, something that sets you aside from everybody else. You know, everybody, you stood out.
I know. This is the way I am. I'm very conspicuous. You know, I'm 5'9", and of course, 6 feet in heels, and, sometimes I go out with flats too. No, I'm kidding. So to make a long story short, I'm a conspicuous type person. And
yeah,
no matter what I wear or how they subdue me, I still stand out for some reason or other.
You're an inspiration, though, to a lot of women to be able to do what you do.
Oh, all my friends got licenses and all became real estate agents.
Well, you've reinvented yourself.
Yeah. In other words, I started with science of mind, religious science. That tells you can just do anything and be anything you want to.
Uh-huh.
And I was just coming out of a marriage where I didn't feel like I was enough, you know?
Yeah.
And that gave me an incredible lift, and that encouraged me to open my real estate office. I had $10,000 saved from working all those years, and I said I might as well invest in myself.
Good for you.
And I had a theatrical clientele. I had all the stars coming in wanting me to show them houses. I sold houses to Tab Hunter, actually. Tab bought 3 houses from me.
That's amazing.
He and I became best friends.
Now, where can they go to get more information about Gloria Paul and all your books and the newest one that's going to be coming out on May West?
Yeah, well, I've been working on that for a couple of years because I put it aside and then I just got back to it. That's www.GloriaPall.com. I have a very extensive website. And there's a lot of pin-up pictures of me. I was a pin-up legend. I was in hundreds of magazine covers. And,
lady, I've got a newsflash for you. You were gorgeous.
Yeah.
And you know
I got
what?
A
you
few
still
wishes.
Are.
What?
You still are gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, I just had my 79th birthday 2 weeks ago.
And see, that's the inspiration that you are. At 79, you're still reinventing yourself. You're an author. You're still out there doing your thing.
Plus, I make costumes and hats and jewelry and clothes, and every time I go somewhere, nobody has anything like I have on. And I win prizes.
You're one of a kind, my dear.
What?
You are one of a kind.
Well, I just have a lot of gifts. So I thank God for all my gifts. I mean, gee, look at all the things I can do.
Well, would you come back and visit with us again? Because I know you've got a ton more stories.
Oh, my stories are endless. All the things I've done and been through, unbelievable.
Well, you've got to come back and share more.
I'd love to.
And have yourself a wonderful, wonderful day. You are a special lady.
Oh, thank you. And you're gorgeous. I saw you on your website.
Oh, thank you, Gloria. We got to meet in person.
I hope so.
You take good care now, my darling.
I'll meet you halfway. I live in North Hollywood, and you're in Sacramento, so I can meet you halfway somewhere.
That's just a hop, skip, and a jump. I'll be down.
Okay.
Take care, Gloria.
Thank you.
Bye. Once again, that's Gloria Paul. She's got tons of books. And let me give you just an example. It's like The Girl of 100 Faces showed you how to pose for the 50s style. She's got 100 passes for lads and lasses. She's written tons of books. It's just incredible. But go to www.GloriaPall, and that's P like in Peter, A-L-L.com, GloriaPall.com. How the world goes round and round on Pop Off, that's what it's all about. But you know what? The world goes round for all of us to learn from and to become whatever we want to be. Because, as my next guest is going to say, aging ain't for sissies.
Hello? Hello?
There's always an SOS out for what life is all about and how to change what's happening in life to make it for the better. Well, I don't know. We're going to be talking a little bit about aging and, the empty nest syndrome, the retirement syndrome, illness, act three of our life. We go on, we keep on going, we try to do what we're supposed to do in life. And then we say, we're faced with all these unique challenges. I just don't know what to do with myself. Where do I begin? Well, I'm telling you, can the last years of your life be as rewarding as the first? Why not? Well, you've got to have some tools to go along with it. So I guess the whole idea is this. It's called Dr. Beth Erickson and the book that she is writing. It's called Aging Isn't for Sissies. I tell you. Anyway, it isn't. It really isn't. But you know what? I always look at it this way. If you can talk to a person like Gloria Paul and see what she did and how she made a difference and changed her life. She was a Hollywood showgirl, and then she met all these different people. She did the movies. She did the television and then reinvented herself into a real estate agent. I mean, can you imagine doing something like that? That's got to be absolutely incredible. Well, Dr. Beth Erickson can then tell us how we can make some of these changes. Her book is coming out soon. It's not out yet. The Aging Isn't for Sissies. But her previous book, Longing for Dad, delves into our personal lives and who we are. And I guess that's where we have to begin. Hi, Dr. Erickson. Nice to have you with us on Pop Off.
Well, thank you, Mary Jane. It's good to be with you.
It's so interesting because I just talked to a gal by the name of Gloria Paul. And
uh-huh.
She was a showgirl and, did a lot of movies and television in the 50s, reinvented herself late, maybe in her 50s, as a real estate agent and is still doing that. And she became a new person altogether.
Right.
And this is basically what you're saying. You got to let go of yesterday and look to tomorrow.
Yeah. Yes.
But
well,
how do we get that mentality?
How do we get it?
Yes.
Well, I think in some ways the crisis that prompts the getting of that mentality calls, it knocks for each of us, particularly in our fifth decade of life, or sometimes if baby boomers are slow learners, it comes calling in the sixth decade of life. But what comes calling metaphorically is a sense of what am I to do with my life now? And it doesn't necessarily mean that your life to date has been unfulfilling.
No, not at all.
Although for some people, if it's chronically been unfulfilling, they have an even more difficult time figuring it out. But the question that people intuitively ask at this stage, the 50s and early 60s of their lives, is, who am I now?
Yeah.
And it's because in the teens and 20s, the primary developmental task was to figure out, who am I? In age 30 and 40 decades, it's, what can I achieve? What can I accomplish? But by age 50, your roles are no longer inherently the same. You're no longer, parents begin dying off. You begin launching your last child to go out into the world to seek his or her fortune. Or if in this economy, if you're downsized and outsourced, all of those kinds of issues prompt people to say, who am I now?
But you know what I love? And it, you said this, and these are your words, not mine, but it was perfect. You said you continue to grow, not grow old.
Yes. It, the cliche, age is a state of mind, really, really is true.
I believe that.
Yeah. Although, unfortunately, some people in this era, well, we're all faced at this time in our lives. We're all faced with the question of, do I want to spend the rest of my life living or dying?
Mm-hmm.
And the people who make the choice to spend the rest of their lives dying do, in fact, that, and eventually end up with all kinds of psychological issues, career or work purpose of their lives issues. To be able to say, I know my purpose now at this age of my life.
Dr. Erickson, I got to be honest with you. If you really want to be depressed, all you have to think is the day you're born, you start dying, for gosh sake. So forget it. Just let it go and keep having that inner fountain of youth that you refer to.
Yes.
Be a part of you. I mean, I just turned 60 on Tuesday.
Happy birthday.
I'm an author now. You know, it's like, so what?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a number.
Well, and I would like to nudge you to go even a little bit beyond the so what, it's just a number, because I think there are tremendous fruits of being 60 and older. I am turned 61 in July, so I know whereof I speak.
Uh-huh.
And one of the biggest fruits is to be role models for living vitally to people, women especially, who are younger than we, who see that growing up is not the same thing as growing old, and that you can have, you need to figure out what gets your juices going now.
Well, I don't know how it was with your mom, but my mother at 60, that's not me, not even close.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think people were older a generation ago, at the same age where we are now. Although I have to say, my mother at 60 probably didn't have but two or three gray hairs, and she had only about that many when she died at 76.
That's great.
Yeah, but those are the more cosmetic things that make for vital living.
No, I want to look at what's inside a person. What are you accomplishing? Were you just vegetating the last part of your life, or are you doing something?
Yes. And are you more than are you doing something? Are you being someone? Because we can have lots and lots of friends that we play golf with or play bridge with, but so do we feel like that's fun or is it fulfilling? And
yes.
My guess is you can only play so much golf and so much bridge before, if you're a seeker at all, you want something different. You want more depth in your life.
We are living, especially in this country, I think it's a little bit different in other countries, European countries, but in this country, we are such a youth-oriented society.
Yes,
you know, we've
we
got
are.
The Botox and the collagen, and we've got to try and stay as young as we possibly be. Now, I don't mean that you shouldn't be the best you can be. Mm-hmm. I want to be the best 60 I could be, but I know I'm not going to be 30 again. There's just no way.
Right. Nor would I want to be.
Exactly.
You know, I love the place where I am in my life. And one of the tasks is not just to figure out what gives your life meaning now, but also to figure out what's your legacy. What is it that you're going to leave the world?
Well, yeah, but see, I think a little bit different than you.
Okay.
Yes, I want there to be a legacy, but that's kind of thinking there's an end. I don't think of my life ever coming to an end. It goes on. I'm just stepping off into another realm, you know?
Yes, I agree with that. I definitely agree that death is just another transformation. But still, in that none of us is going to live forever, I think there is a natural human tendency to say, I want people to know that when I die, I'm not going to be immediately forgiven. Immediately forgotten.
Well, either one.
So, so what am I going to leave? What are going to be my footprints that, even if it's a small contribution to other people, that it's a contribution, that my life has made a difference?
I wish we would start out and teach kids to do that right at the beginning.
Yes. Well, I think the kids who have the adolescents particularly, who have the greatest satisfaction and the smoothest lives, smoothest in the positive sense, are those who have been shown how to do that. They may not, their parents may not have, quote, taught them or talked to them about that. But I think there is a natural human tendency to say, I want my life to make a difference. And that question takes on great urgency by the time
people... And I'm so glad you said, I want my life to make a difference, because, you know, what we think of as success or achievement is, you know, the big car, the big house, the fancy clothes, the big trips. You know what? That is not everything. Life is very short. You'd better do something more in this life to contribute than just having stuff.
Yes. In fact, one of the things that people generally come to realize in the fifth decade of their life is that you can have much to live on, but it doesn't make much difference if you have little to live for.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Yes. So, again, that's finding something to live for, finding out what gets you up in the morning.
And know that when you get up in the morning and you're 60 or you're 55 or whatever, you have wisdom that you didn't have. You were pretty stupid at 20 when you look back.
Exactly. 20 and beyond for some of us.
Oh, yes. I'm afraid that sometimes even at 50, at 60, you know,
yeah.
I might want to deal with.
Yeah. No, but that's absolutely true. That's one of the biggest benefits of being this age, is we do have wisdom that we can share with other people, younger people.
So then do we have to kind of go inside and figure out who we are now and what we want to accomplish? And that takes a little bit of doing, though, that you have to really go in there and seek.
Yes, that's right. And that's the purpose of my writing this book that I'm writing. I take a very spiritual perspective on figuring out who am I now. It isn't just a matter of do these three exercises and you'll have the answer to that. It's much more teaching people how to go inside and do some interior exploration instead of only what task can I accomplish now, what acquisition can I have.
Yeah, because it can be very confusing.
Well, confusing, and also by this age, for most people, if they have much depth at all, they realize that's pretty superficial.
Yeah. You're right.
Which so, I think is one of the reasons, especially with empty nesters, that the statistics, the divorce statistics, are that there is an increase in the numbers of divorces that happen when the last child leaves home. Well, it's because parents finally have the opportunity, but take the opportunity to look at each other and say, who are you over there? God, I don't know who you are.
And don't be afraid. See, we have this thing called fear.
Uh-huh.
We have fear, and we have fear of failure. Those two things can really step you, you know, kind of trip you up, and then you don't go on.
Yes. Well, and they are major contributors to why people get stuck in this process. They're too afraid to ask the hard questions. They're too afraid to look at the possibility of, you know, maybe I don't want to be a CEO who works myself like a crazy woman all the time. Or maybe this person is such a stranger to me, I can't stand them.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's time for me to finally buy the sailboat I always wanted and get on it and sail around the world. Or, you know, you've always heard that people have a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
Well, if they don't have, but that usually occurs in the age 40 decade. So if they haven't had some kind of crisis in the 40th, in their 40th decade, or 40th year rather, it's really going to be a significant crisis they begin to look at their lives now.
When is your book going to be out?
Well, it depends on when I finish writing it.
Okay,
I hope to have it done by November, it's a matter of just getting it in print with a publishing house.
Oh, see, I love the name Aging Isn't for Sissies. It isn't. But you You know, you've got some great ideas. Now, you also have a website, right?
Yes, www.drbetherickson.com, and it's DrBetherickson. And if anybody is interested in communicating with me via email, my email address is drbetherickson@aol.com. I'd love to hear from your folks.
Fantastic. Keep up the good work, Dr. Erickson. I'll try and do it on my side, and we're going to keep going forward.
Yes, we sure are.
And you have a wonderful day.
Thanks. You too, Mary Jane.
Take
care.
Bye-bye. Dr. Beth Erickson. I'm serious. She's right. You know, you've got to live for today and for tomorrow. Yesterday is only a lesson learned. Yesterday is whatever experience that you got that you can now use today and project into tomorrow. I've had so many people, before we go on to our next guest, I have to share this with you. I have two cousins who live in Texas, and they call me and they say, oh, do you remember when we were in high school? Do you remember when we did this? And do you remember? Half of the time, I don't remember what they're talking about. And they go, well, those were the best days of my life. And I thought, oh, my Lord. I said, if those were the best days of your life, I feel sorry for you. I really, really do. And they said, well, when was the best days of your life? Here you are 60 years old. I said, tomorrow. Tomorrow is the best day of my life. It should be for you, too. You're looking forward. You're looking onward. You're looking upward. You are designing your life and changing your life. You are in charge of your own life. Use your experience. Use your wisdom. And use it to the best of your ability. Dr. Beth Erickson does, and we can, too. The best is always yet to be.
Hello.
Money, money, money. We just talked about that. And we also talked about what money means and what it should or should not mean to you. But how about being an entrepreneur? Well, this lady is an entrepreneur. She's also an activist. She has worked with the likes of Walt Disney, Universal Studios, NBC, even Caesars Las Vegas. She hosts of her own television show called Getting Your Money's Worth. And she's also president of Wesco, her own company. And her message is this, to women especially, think for yourself and think of what you can do, not what you can't do. Nice to have you with us today. This is a special lady. Her name is Judith West. Hi, Judith.
Hi there. Good morning to you.
And, you know, isn't it, am I not saying this correctly? You got to think for yourself. You got to know that you can accomplish whatever you want to accomplish or you will never go forward.
That's right. You have to believe in yourself. And as you said on the lead-in to me, women are not very good at believing in yourself. You know, some of the characteristics of leadership, like motivation, inspiring, delegating, problem solving, women have been led to believe that men are superior at that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it, Mary Jane, those are the very qualities that women use every day in running their families.
Well, you know, I always said, and I bet you'll agree with me, women, don't sell yourself, because a woman will say, well, I'm just a housewife. Excuse me. You're a financial expert, you're a chauffeur, you're a social planner, you're a nutritionist. You're all these things. Stop saying, putting yourself down.
Exactly. And I think that women have, as I said, they err in not tooting their own horn and not going for what they want, but going for it, obviously, in a reasonable, planned method.
Exactly. And, you know, most of them, especially young women, they'll say, oh, well, you know, we love that you worked so hard for us to get us so that we can achieve anything we want to do or accomplish anything we want to do, and we don't have to worry anymore. Oh, yes, you do. That glass ceiling is still up there ready to crack over your head.
Absolutely. I mean, the fight for, it's still not over for equality. Someone said to me the other day, when will things be equal? I said, well, when you can talk about the old girl network the same way you talk about the old boy network,
Thank you.
We know we'll have equality.
I mean, of all the countries in the world, how many countries have already elected women presidents? And this country that is supposed to be the most advanced, we won't even think about it.
Exactly. And listen, and while there are many female entrepreneurs, there are a handful of very small number of CEOs of Fortune 500 companies that are women. That's a minute number.
Absolutely. So how do we begin? I mean, do we have to start out with an idea, a hobby that we're going to turn into a business? We want to be entrepreneurs, right?
Exactly. Well, for one thing, you do have to believe in yourself, and you do have to have something to sell or something, a service or product that for which you've developed a sense of a need. It's not just a matter of deciding, well, I'm going to start doing it. Before I became an entrepreneur, I worked for a very demanding entrepreneur, and that's where I got the idea. I was working very, very hard, helping him become richer, and I thought to myself, gee, if I could use my brain and work this hard to help him become richer, why should I do it for myself?
You bet.
But it was a large retail company. But my idea was what I do now for a living with Wesco, which is to manufacture retail store display fixtures. But before I started my own business doing it, I went out in the marketplace and worked for that kind of a manufacturer to really get product knowledge and to test my resilience. I went to work in sales on commission. And I did that deliberately because I wanted to make sure I had the resilience to keep up at it, and that I had the guts to face rejection and keep on going.
Good for you.
But I do want to say this. I think, you know, it's important to say I had a very good support team in my husband was supportive of me, and my husband did have an income come in. There is a need to have a certain amount of capital to run on and to live on while you are building a business.
Right. Because where do you get the money?
You don't open the door and say, okay. Well, the truth of the matter is it's much easier than in my day. Banks are very, very sympathetic to women going into business. But you have to walk in with a soundly developed idea, with a business plan, with a jacket on, and stick your hand out and shake hands with a senior loan officer and have a presence about you. Mm. And it helps if you have a corporate sounding entity, very often females don't even use their first name, they use their initials. I'm not saying it's right. My own company is Wesco, but I deliberately chose a name that didn't have cottage industry sound about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the other thing, too, is you're right about the attitude. And maybe this is not a terrifically good analogy, but I think it fits. It's just like when we talk about when women walk down the street and we're always afraid of, you know, being attacked, et cetera. The person who is the one that goes after a victim, they look for someone who's stoop shoulders down, you know, is very
Absolutely.
Afraid of everything. You have that woman who stands up there and walks with her shoulders back and her purse under her arm and says, I own the world.
Absolutely.
They stay away from them, and those are the ones that the CEOs will talk to.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, I live in New York City, and I'm on the streets every day. And it's true, you have to act like you own that piece of real estate that you're walking on,
mm-hmm.
and dress that way and speak that way. It's also it is easier today too because the internet has a world of sites where you can go in and do a lot of research. You can even access how to write a business plan. And the other thing that women do not do, and we say old boys network, there's a reason why there's this old boys network. Men help each other. Women, unfortunately, are not good about helping each other.
We're not trained to do that.
I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's like this, the idea, well, I made it on my own, you make it on your own. I really don't know what it is. But I have found that even whatever the gender is, it really helps if you have a good mentor that you can talk to. And don't be embarrassed about asking someone that who is successful in business if you can come in and talk about your plan and get some ideas. Most people are flattered when you ask them to help you and ask you to help you give ideas. And really, there's nothing that's as good as role modeling. Before you go to a bank officer, before you go in to see somebody, if you can have a give and take, I'll say this, he says that, it's a very good way of preparing yourself to respond in that kind of an interview.
You know what, Judith, I think, too, that, you know, young men, and I think it's starting to change. The next generation of females that are growing up now may have some change in that. But they do competitive sports. They do teamwork.
Right.
The females were never done. My generation wasn't, that's for sure. And I think the one just behind, rather in front of me isn't. But the next one might have a little bit more of that moxie.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, to be a winner, you have to think like a winner. And you can't worry about hurting somebody's feelings. Women are always so worried, you know, I don't want to hurt his feelings. I don't want to step in front of him. I mean, that's nonsense. If you want something, you have to go for it. It doesn't mean you have to give up the things that are sensitive about a woman. I think women make very good bosses, and women make very good leaders because women do have an extra sense about people's feelings. But but you can't be a namby-pamby about this. It's a hard world out there, and you to be a winner, you have to think and act like a winner.
And you know the other thing, Judith, and this takes a lot of work. You have to have discipline when you have your own business. If you're an entrepreneur, it's not like somebody's telling you what has to be done.
No, you have to, and I have to tell you this. I mean, it's a lot of hard work, but the truth of the matter is, it really is. I think it's somewhat easier now. I think the internet has made it much easier too, because after all, products can be advertised on the internet, and you can work, and you don't have to work in an office every day to access your records. You can work at home. So there is a certain freedom or flexibility that didn't exist before. But the truth of the matter is, I don't know how else to say it. I don't want to keep saying the same thing. The truth of the matter is, you have to really think successfully and believe in yourself and your product to transmit that to the other person, whether it's to get financing or to get the sale.
And don't do like we do on diets. I'll start tomorrow. Start today.
Start today, absolutely. And also, if indeed, when you get yourself to the point where you can get, where you can hire employees, women sometimes don't go for the best employee. They want to save a little money. They want to get some part-time help or something. The truth tell, I built my business into a very successful entity. But from the get-go, I hired the best that I could afford.
Good for you.
Because after all, that's, you know, the person, whoever you're hiring, represents your image. And the thing that I think that women can offer today that is very valuable to the consumer, Mary Jane, is I think that women are better at offering service. So many of consumers are turned off by big bureaucratic entities. They walk into a department store, if it's retail, no one helps them. Consumers are prepared to spend a little bit more money to get that extra level of service.
Now, I want everybody to know that you have a website called judithwestnyc.com.
Right.
And they can find out when your show was on and everything, right?
That's absolutely true.
Fantastic. Judith, you've been terrific.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
We'll have to talk again. I'm serious.
Please. Have me on again. I've enjoyed it. Thanks so much, Mary Jane.
Have a wonderful day.
Same to you.
Bye-bye. Now. Again, that's judithwestnyc.com. You too can be whatever you want to be on Pop Off. And being what you want to be has to be your dream. You know, you got to think about what you really want to do. That's what Pop Off is trying to do, give you the tools to do that, to be happier and, you know, achieve whatever you want in life. And we'll achieve that again tomorrow right here at high noon on bbsradio.com. I'm Mary Jane Pop. Thank you so much for joining me on Pop Off. In the meantime, live simply, laugh often, love deeply, but above all else, dare to dream. Somewhere over.
that you did.